Welcome to the No Meh Movies Podcast. How many times have you heard a movie is alright, it's average, it's just okay? If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh, I'm Davey Barris. My partner Darren Cross is on vacation, so I'm bringing you another bonus episode to bridge the gap between Season 1 and Season 2 of the No Meh Movies Podcast. And if you listened last week, you know that I did the movie Prometheus, and it was the first part of a two-part series here, because this week I watched Alien Covenant, and oh man, do I have some thoughts about Alien Covenant. Last week, I kind of stayed in the format of the show. I'm going to a little bit this week, but I'm also just going to blow through it, because I want to get to it. I want to get to the fun stuff. These bonus episodes were supposed to be a little bit, you know, short and sweet and to the point, something to hold you over until Darren's back and we can go crazy and in-depth on the meh movies like we always do. Spoiler warning for Alien Covenant. Spoiler warning for Prometheus and the whole Alien franchise. Spoiler warning for the story of Robinson Crusoe. Spoiler warning for the poem Paradise Lost. I got a lot of things to talk about here. Alien Covenant scores a 66% on Rotten Tomatoes and scores a 6.4 on IMDb, which keeps it just above a meh movie. But because these are the bonus episodes and I'm having some fun here, we are going to talk Alien Covenant this week. In case it's been a while since you've seen it or you've never seen it before, Alien Covenant is about the crew of the colony ship Covenant. That's right, now it's a colony crew, a little bit different. Every time an alien movie pops up, the humans are always doing something a little bit different. And this time they're on their way to colonize a new planet that they found way out there that they think is going to be the perfect planet for human life. Their ship gets damaged, and while they're awake, they detect a signal from a much closer planet that looks like it could sustain human life, and it looks like it might be a human signal coming from the planet. So they go down to investigate, and throughout their investigation, we find out more about the aliens, we find out more about the engineers, and we find out what happened after Prometheus. So that is the story of Alien Covenant. And I got to tell you guys, I was incredibly entertained by this movie. We got back to the horror genre in this movie, and that's what I wanted to see. Did the movie do what it was supposed to do? This movie is considered a science fiction slash action horror film, which pretty much sums up the entire Alien franchise to begin with. And like I said, the horror, absolutely this movie did what it was supposed to do. The scenes with the neomorph aliens, which are the little tiny white-colored creatures that kind of make their appearance in the second act, those scenes are incredibly intense. The scenes at the end of the movie where we kind of have new aliens popping up, I think they're playful. They're called by fans the protomorphs. Protomorph. Instead of a xenomorph, it's a protomorph alien, because every version of aliens are slightly different. They're definitely different species of alien, and something we'll talk about. Those scenes at the end where Tennessee flies down, one of the pilots flies down to try to get the remaining survivors off the planet's surface. Incredibly intense scenes. And so, yeah, as far as horror goes, I think this movie definitely nails it on horror. As far as sci-fi goes, of course, we've got different aliens. We've got planets. We've got spaceships. This movie definitely has our sci-fi covered. And as far as the action goes, yeah, the action pretty good too. Like I said, those scenes with the neomorphs, those scenes at the end, the action is definitely there. So did this movie do what it was supposed to do? Yes, it did. Let's just get into successes and failures, because I'm going to end up talking about the cast throughout successes and failures here. Again, we come back with a pretty strong cast this time. We've got Michael Fassbender, who's getting top billing, I think, in this, playing two roles. He plays a new android named Walter, but he also reprises his role as David from Prometheus. We got Catherine Watterson coming in as Daniels, our new heroine that we're entering into the Alien franchise. We got Billy Crudup as Orum, the new faith guy. Someone's always got to have faith. We've got Demian Bashir as Lope, We got Danny McBride as Tennessee, our pilot. Jesse Smollett as Ricks. Amy Simons as Ferris. Carmen Ehogo as Corrine. And a few other people rounding out this cast. So, big success for me, and I started to talk about it a little bit, is the Neomorphs, the baby alien attacks. And let me break down how this goes down, because it seems now it's pretty clear that for these alien, these creatures to form, they have to combine with somebody else's DNA. And we've seen it a lot from the facehuggers, right? We've seen the facehuggers, they implant an embryo, and then it uses that human DNA to kind of combine with that embryo and create a xenomorph. We saw it in Alien 3 with a dog. We saw the cloning and stuff going on in Alien Resurrection, and then Ellen Ripley's DNA being combined with a queen and what that created. So in this version, the planet itself has these spores that can be get released from what look like little pods or seeds all over the forest floor. And when these spores get released, they attach themselves onto a host. In our case, it happens to be the crew of the Covenant. And what's born from these spores and combining with the human DNA is they're basically baby aliens. They're little baby, vicious, gremlin-sized aliens that wreak so much havoc on our crew. And it's by far the best scene in the movie. And the first person to get infected is a soldier. I believe Corrine is the character that brings this soldier back to the vessel where Ferris, the pilot, is waiting, and they try to take him into the med bay. Ferris is freaking out about, you know, a contagion, basically about quarantining. She doesn't know what to do. And then she gets blood sprayed in her face when the alien, it's not a chest burster, it's a back burster, bursts out through the back, and she traps Corrine inside the medical bay with the alien. Oh my, the fear, the terror, the horror, everything. It's so perfect. It's so alien. And it's basically Ridley Scott saying, you think I lost a step with Prometheus? You think I don't know how to do horror anymore? Check this out. And unfortunately, Corrine bites it. The alien gets her. In her panic, Ferris opens the door again to try to shoot the Neomorph. It gets out, then attacks her in the cargo bay, and I think some stray shots, they basically explode the landing vessel just as our crew is getting back. They're then attacked again. There's a second Neomorph that comes out of one of the foot soldiers. That Neomorph attacks everybody in a field, and we get this scene that reminded me a lot of the raptors in Jurassic Park, the way they like hunted in the tall grass, where this Neomorph is out to attack our soldiers in this open field. And it does like this tail whip thing and whips one of them across the face, which I don't think we've ever seen before. Our crew is only rescued, our surviving crew, because I think they lose 5 or 6 people throughout this attack, are rescued by David. David shows up as this hooded figure, scares off the Neomorph, and brings our soldiers, our crew, back to safety. So huge success for me right there. However, that's going to lead me into our biggest fail. And for me, the biggest fail is David. Now, David at first seems like he's going to rescue our humans. Seems like he's gonna be the good guy and the aliens are gonna be the bad guys. And unfortunately, as we dig into a little bit more about what David was doing on this planet for the last few years, we find out that he's been into some messed up stuff. Now, just like in the Prometheus, we got all these allusions to a god and creation, and we got all the Greek mythology with Prometheus and, you know, giving fire to the humans. And we were wondering, you know, what's up with David? What is this movie trying to tell us about creation, about human life, about, you know, about having faith in God? Well, it turns out in Covenant, it's not trying to say much. Originally, this movie was going to be called Paradise Lost, It's a 17th century English poem, first published in 1667, consists of 10 books with over 10,000 lines of verse, and it's basically a poem concerning the biblical story of the fall of man, the temptation of Adam and Eve by the fallen angel Satan, and their expulsion from the Garden of Eden, original sin. All that stuff is kind of loped up in these poems, Paradise Lost. That was going to be the original name for the movie. It was going to be called Alien Paradise Lost. Instead, they changed it to Alien Covenant. So this whole theory of Paradise Lost, and basically I believe what the movie was trying to say is David is Satan, because he's no longer Prometheus trying to protect the humans. Now he's trying to destroy their world. And I mean, that's what Satan was doing. Satan thought if he gave man and woman sin, he tricks them into guilt and shame and all these terrible things, right? And they're cursed with this forever. And that was Satan's plan. He returns triumphantly to hell to his fallen angels and tells them how their scheme worked. Now they have complete dominion over paradise, right? Because all the evil has been released into the world. I mean, that's not really what David was trying to do. He was trying to wipe out the humans and the engineers for creating the humans that created him. So he was creating xenomorphs that could destroy all of them. I think that was the plan, but I'm still not sure on David's motivations. Like, it just doesn't make sense. And he tries to come off as this, like, just stranded guy, right? I've been stranded on this planet. He wants to come off as Caruso. He says Caruso on his island, referring to Robinson Crusoe. You know, a famous story about someone who was trapped on an island. The thing is, with Caruso, if you actually look at the Robinson Crusoe story, he's not that great of a guy. He, like, sells people into slavery. He takes on, like, an indentured servant. He murders a whole bunch of people because they're cannibals. And he feels guilty about it because they're cannibals, because that's what society tells them, and it's not their fault. But he murders them anyways. So Caruso is not a great guy. He's looking out for himself. And I guess so it is kind of appropriate to call David, to call David the android Caruso on his island. And then David decides that for his plan to work, he should try to seduce Walter, the other android. And we get into this whole thing where he's teaching Walter how to play the flute. And it's very sexual. There's definitely something in there about, you know, like, because Walter is a mirror image of David. There's definitely something in there about, you know, self-gratification, masturbation. Like, I have no clue what the writers and Ridley Scott were trying to say. Maybe they just thought it was a cool scene. It's very bizarre. And so I gotta give this whole storyline a big fail. I mean, basically what it sums down to is they're trying to set up the fact that David created aliens. Why do they need a creation story? Why can't they be really cool, mysterious monsters in outer space? Why do they have to be tied to our existence and to the engineer's existence and that evolutionary chain? I mean, yes, we can explore their backstory and where they come from, but why can't they just be monsters from space? Like, it was so cool in the first Alien when they were monsters from space. And then maybe they had a vendetta against humans because we kept, you know, coming into their space and torching their queens with flamethrowers. So maybe they had a score to settle, but looping in their evolution with our evolution just feels unnecessary. Moving on to another success for me, I gotta say that the somber opening to this movie is a success for me. This movie starts much different than other Alien movies start. In Alien and Aliens, there's very much like a positive energy. Like, everyone's happy to be awake. There are, you know, ooh, there's an adventure we're going to go on, whether it's discovering this signal from a planet, an alien, or whether it's going to kill some aliens and aliens. Alien 3 starts off a little weird, a little somber, because Ripley's crash lands, and we lose, like, two fan-favorite characters, Hicks and Newt. Pulling some alien trivia from the back of my mind here. Alien Resurrection, the crew of smugglers is pretty upbeat. In Prometheus, they're very enthusiastic because they're discovering these engineers. They think they're discovering basically God. And this one, it starts with an accident. And, you know, the ship gets rocked by a neutrino burst. I will tell you guys that for quick picks, I tried to research neutrino bursts and if they could actually happen. And I was getting into websites. I was getting way too deep in neutrino science, and I gave up on that quick pick. But they get a neutrino burst that disrupts the ship. Everyone wakes up except for the captain. The captain, who's a cameo from James Franco, kind of goes uncredited. He pops up later in a recording from Daniels. But he gets trapped in his pod. It doesn't open, and I forget what happens to it. It was damaged, and it catches on fire, basically, and he burns alive in his pod and dies. And that's how we start this movie. And it's a pretty somber, messed up way to start this movie. And everything is very ominous. Like, Walter is kind of a very ominous android because a lot of the personality has been sucked out of his model, his version, because of David and the hell that David creates. They really tone him down. And great job by Michael Fassbender. Incredible performance by Michael Fassbender in this movie. So that's very somber. And Daniels and Aurum are kind of arguing. They're kind of butting heads about what to do with the crew. Aurum is very concerned that he's not going to be a good leader for this crew. So everything starts very somber. And I thought it was a really cool way to start this movie. You know, it set a different tone. So already, when we land on this planet, everybody's very on edge. Aurum's on edge because he has no clue if he's making the right decisions or not. Spoiler warning, he was not making the right decisions. That guy was a terrible leader. Daniels is very upset because she just lost her husband. And now her crew is making a bad decision. And she's trying to steer him in the other direction. So yeah. So there's a lot of tension already as we land on this planet, and it all boils over in this Neomorph attack. So yeah, so I thought that was a pretty cool way to start the movie. I'm giving a success there. I got some more things that I could expand as successes and failures, but I'm going to save them for quick picks. I'm going to have a fun quick pick segment. So let's take a look at what some of the Rotten Tomatoes reviewers thought, because to end up as a 66%, we're pretty close to being split on this one. So Amy Nicholson from MTV says, this is a Rotten review. She says, yet again, a crew sniffs after a mysterious ping and sticks their nose in a deadly larva pod. Are astronauts learning? God, no. And if the audience expected a different plot, we're not learning either. I feel like this theme comes up in a lot of these Rotten reviews. I'll add to this another Rotten review. Brian Lowry from CNN.com. He says, yet director Ridley Scott, who birthed the original nearly 40 years ago, as well as that last film, plunges back into the latter's mythology with equally uninspired and perhaps more blatantly derivative results. These two critics, and you know, probably plenty more critics, are basically complaining that this movie is uninspired, right? My God, another alien attack, you know, another group of humans going to a planet and getting attacked by aliens. What do you want? What do you want from an alien movie? This is exactly what I wanted from an alien movie. I wanted to go to a planet. I wanted to see our astronauts get attacked. I wanted things to get crazy. What do you want? Do you want more Prometheus? Do you want more explaining and God and faith and our origins? I wanted a horror movie. I wanted to see some aliens mess up some stuff. I wanted to see some heroes emerge. And we got that. You know, we got heroes in Daniels and Tennessee. We got heroes in Walter. We still don't know what happened to Walter, by the way. That's still out there. they've talked about doing sequels to Alien Covenant. I think the studio is a little scared by the box office results. They've talked about it. We don't know what happened to Walter, and I'll get into that in a second in Quick Picks. But yeah, we got some really strong characters out of this. And we got some really intense, cool horror scenes. If you want more philosophy, if you want more religion, if you really wanted them to continue the Prometheus line, well then, I apologize, and maybe Alien franchise isn't the right place for those things. Explorations of space and human struggle and life and death, those are pretty crazy themes that fit Alien movies. And I'm glad that Alien Covenant goes back there. All right, let's check out some of the fresh reviews this week. So Christopher Orr from The Atlantic knows what I'm talking about. He says, this may not be a movie that reinvents the wheel, but it's one that knows how to make it roll. I like that, Christopher. Yeah, Ridley Scott. And the writer, I should say that a lot of people had their hands in writing this movie. The original screenplay was done by Jack Paglen. Then someone named Michael Green did a rewrite. Then someone named Dante Harper wrote a new script. But then an extensive rewrite was performed by screenwriter John Logan. And I think what we end up seeing in the end is really the hands of John Logan working here. And he talked about how much he loved the original Alien. And he wanted to pay homage to that while also taking into account the deeper implications of Prometheus. In terms of tone and pace, and how we choose to play this particular symphony, we wanted to create a really frightening movie. So that's his quote about writing it. And yeah, you could feel it. You could feel the original Alien in there. And that's what they were intending. They wanted to get back to that. And I'm glad they did. We all love Alien. That's what we wanted more of. That's what we wanted from Alien 3, from Alien Resurrection. We were waiting them to get back and hit these beats and make us feel the things we felt in that first Alien. And aside from Aliens, I think this movie might get the closest of all the entire Alien franchise. All right. One more fresh review. This is intense from Allison Wilmore from BuzzFeed News. Allison says, it's an Alien movie for our times. One in which mankind isn't just under the thumb of an oppressive corporation, but sowing the seeds of its own destruction on a more sweeping scale. So basically saying that not only is the Weyland Company, right, this evil oppressive company, but they created David. We created David. We basically sowed the seeds of our own destruction by creating AI. I do think that there's more to explore with AI, and I think that's something that Ridley Scott wants to explore more with AI and the potentials for destruction because of AI. It's something that's been explored in a lot of movies. Terminator, iRobot, I love that movie. It's not, new ground here, but definitely his take on it, like the fact that David wants to basically wipe out the humans. Because he thinks, I don't need them anymore. I'm advanced past them. And yeah, I think Allison's right. I mean, I will say to Allison's point, we really don't get enough after how many movies, we don't get enough about the actual Weyland Corporation. So it's a little hard for me to say if they're an oppressive corporation or if they're what Google or Amazon is going to be in 100 years from now. Something that's just a fact of life. It's just absolutely a fact of life right now that when you need to look something up, you Google it. And when you need next day shipping, you get it on Amazon. I don't know if I call the Weyland Corporation oppressive. I don't think we know enough about them. That was talked about. I think there was a novel. I think there's a prequel novelization, if I remember from my research, for Alien Covenant that dives into the Weyland Corporation and everything before the expedition leaves Earth. Some crazy stuff that happens there. If you want a little backstory on the Weyland Corporation. All right. This is the part of the show where we would normally pitch a sequel. All right. For my sequel, and I mentioned this, and I'm going to let it lead into my first quick pick. And my first nitpick. And it's that we don't know what happened to Walter. So Walter and David get into a fight, which is kind of ridiculous. Like, why are androids that can't feel pain punching each other and kicking each other? That's just dumb. I mean, the fight choreography was cool, but there's no stakes. Anyways, my quick pick comes in because in the fight, Walter gets his face cut, like on his cheek, from a sharp rock or something like that. So then when David ultimately defeats him in battle and David leaves the cave, he has a cut on his face in the same spot Walter did, which leads the audience to believe that it's Walter. Walter won the fight. Yes, our guy, Walter. He survived. He's going to help our crew. And he does. He helps our crew. He gets them safely on board the Covenant and gets them back up into space. Yay, Walter, the good guy. And then, in the very end, we get the twist that it's actually David. Daniel says something to him. Daniel says, you know, can you help me build my log cabin? And he doesn't remember. He doesn't know what she's talking about. And he freezes. She realizes it's David. So here's my nitpick out of all that. He doesn't need to cut his face. Nobody on the Covenant crew knew that he had cut his face. They only do that to trick the audience. And if that's the case, don't have Walter cut his face to begin with. Because it's really silly that he cuts his face to disguise himself as Walter when the thing he needs to do to disguise himself as Walter, which he does, is burn his left arm. Walter's hand gets burned off. His left hand gets burned off in the first Neomorph attack. It gets cut and sprays that acid blood, and it burns off his hand. And David does this. He burns his hand down to the stump to try to mimic Walter's injury. That's enough. That is enough to trick the crew and the audience. But cutting the face is dumb because nobody knew. Daniels didn't know. Loeb didn't know that his face was cut. Tennessee didn't know. So that's my nitpick, but we don't know what happened to Walter. Walter's still alive, and here's where my sequel comes in. Walter and David are chasing each other through space. Walter, his programming won't let him give up. And, you know what? This combines what they wanted to do with a Prometheus sequel with what they wanted to do with an Alien Covenant sequel. So the engineers come back and they find Walter. Walter tells the remaining engineers, right? There's a few of them at different military installations throughout the galaxy. They come back. They find Walter. Walter explains to him what happened. They help Walter get himself back together, and they chase down David. And David is keeping Tennessee and he's keeping Daniels alive because he needs them as a safety device in case Walter catches up to him, right? He needs something to slow Walter down. And, so he's going to use their lives as that bargaining chip. And he uses the rest of the colonists that were in their pods and creates a whole bunch more xenomorphs. And the engineers and the xenomorphs square off against each other in combat while Walter and David square off each other for Daniel's and Tennessee's lives. That is the sequel I am pitching. So we get more aliens, more alien attacks. We find out more about the engineers. All of you philosophers out there who want to know more about Prometheus, we find out more about that story. And Walter gets his revenge on David. That is the sequel I am pitching this week. All right, you want to hear the rest of my quick picks? Because I got some more for you. First off, this is a huge nitpick. They completely retcon Waylon's interest in where humans come from and the Prometheus mission. In Prometheus, his goal is to figure out how he can extend his life. He is dying, and he wants to extend his life. In the beginning of Alien Covenant, they completely retcon that, and instead, he tells David that it's their mission to find out where they come from. That's his mission. Why? There's no need to retcon that. Like, his motivations were perfectly clear in Prometheus. He was an old man dying of disease. He was trying to prolong his life. And David was his tool to help him do that. David's curiosity, David's fascinations with existence and all that were perfectly met in Prometheus. There's absolutely no reason for the scene to exist at the beginning other than to remind you who David is, other than to make sure you know that Alien Covenant is a sequel to Prometheus. I don't know. Drove me insane. All right, moving on through my quick picks. Oh boy, this is a big one. This is a huge nitpick. And it's a character nitpick. It's not a story nitpick. I'm mad at the characters. F them for smoking on a brand new planet. They just landed on a planet, what seems to be a perfect planet with oceans and forests. No animal life, but plenty of plant life. And what do? They're smoking. They're smoking cigars. They're smoking cigarettes. Not only that, when he finishes a cigarette, he flicks it into the forest. He's the first litterer on a new planet. F those guys for smoking on our new planet. Even though it turns out that the planet was out to get them and would destroy them all in the end. They didn't know that. All right, I got a good one. I got one I like. In this movie, they are using real ammunition again. Somehow, in the whatever years from Prometheus to Alien Covenant. And I was so unsure of this that I actually had to go back and check Prometheus. And in Prometheus, they're shooting these blue bolts, these blue energy bolts out of guns. And in this movie, they're back to shooting bullets. Thank you. Thank you, really, Scott, for fixing that, setting that right. In the Alien movies, the guns shoot bullets, okay? Leave the lasers and the blaster bolts to Star Wars and Star Trek. All right, Ridley Scott, here's where I got a nitpick for you, though. So on the crew's backpacks, they have cameras mounted on their backpacks. Okay, makes sense. They're not wearing helmets this time because the air is clean enough for them to breathe, or is the right combination of elements for them to breathe. So they're not wearing helmets this time. So instead, they have cameras mounted on their backpacks. Fine. That's something an expedition would have. Did you have to make them so obvious that they were GoPro Series 5s? The black ones? Like, I cover them in something. Paint them. Do something. Make them look different. Like, they're freaking GoPros. And they're there the whole movie. The whole movie they're carrying around the backpacks with those stupid GoPros sticking up. It's even the GoPro arm. It's the arm you could buy from Target or Best Buy right now. Come on, of this movie that's known for its props and known for its designs. Come on, do better than that. Do better than GoPros hanging off the back of backpacks. All right, this one I absolutely had to look up because I couldn't believe. I thought this was just a David quirk. But there's another type of alien in this movie. I don't even know if they have a... I think they have a name for it. But I'm not seeing it here on my list of aliens. So it's the alien that kills Rosenthal? It's the alien that kills Rosenthal. She goes to clean herself up in a fountain. Again, everybody cleans themselves in sinks or bath, you know, splashes water in their face to clean themselves in these Ridley Scott movies. Kind of strange. We do get a shower, though, finally. We get a shower scene, and I was surprised. It was a very R-rated shower scene. So Rosenthal gets attacked by this weird hybrid alien that David had been working on and rips her to shreds. David stumbles upon it. Orym also stumbles upon it. And David is trying to calm down this alien creature. And to do that, he breathes in its nostrils. Very much like what he says you would do to tame a horse. Now, I was like, okay, this can't be real, right? This can't be a real thing. This just has to be a weird David-ism that they threw into this movie. They didn't think anyone like me was actually going to look this up. Turns out, 100% true that you can. They believe it's a form of saying hello to the horse or letting it know your scent. Some people have said they could tell the difference between whether you eat meat or eat vegetables to know if you're a predator. But if you come up to a horse and calmly breathe into its nostrils, it might take a few tries, but that horse will recognize that you're okay, that you're cool, that you could be trusted. That's the thing. That's the thing horse people do. And it was working for David until Orym was like, nah, forget this, and just shoots the thing. So, yeah, I give them credit there. That's a real thing. Well, that is my list of quick picks, of nitpicks for this week. I was looking through the trivia. There's so much stuff here. This might be the longest trivia page I've ever seen, but none of it's really that fascinating. Unlike David, Walter speaks with an American accent. So Fassbender is doing two accents here. Here's one for you art fans out there. The terrace, surrounded by cypress trees, where David looks upon the engineer city, was inspired by the series of paintings depicting the Isle of the Dead by 19th century artist Arnold Böcklin. I don't think that's how you pronounce Böcklin. There's accent marks over the O. This is also a nod to Alien creator H.R. Giger, who had crafted his interpretation of the same paintings in his trademark biomechanical style as a tribute to his fellow Swiss, Böcklin. So that's pretty cool. For you art fans out there, if you dig Böcklin's work in Isle of the Dead, then this whole scene was created to look just like that. Very cool. That's what I'm talking about. That's the attention to detail that I'm talking about. All right, Alien fans. All right, No Meh Movie Podcast fans. It's time for me to decide once and for all, is this a good movie or is it a bad movie? And despite all the weirdness going on with David and Walter and that whole storyline, I think you could tell from my review that this is a good movie. I enjoyed this so much more than Prometheus. Now, Prometheus was fine. It was fine, but it wasn't good. It's serviceable if you need to bridge the gap from the end of one story to the beginning of another and to keep the Alien storyline going. But Alien Covenant is what I wanted to see. The alien attacks from the Neomorphs. The alien attacks, I didn't even talk about it in Successes and Failures, from the Xenomorphs. We get this attack on the surface of the planetary ship as Tennessee's trying to lift Bath off. And Daniels, this is really Daniels' most badass, one of her two most badass moments, where she squares off in almost like hand-to-hand combat with the alien, which is crazy. Like, she learns very quickly that that acid blood is something not to be messed with, and eventually gets it in the jaws of the ship's crane and crunches it. Pretty cool kill. Pretty cool alien kill. Then the alien shows up, a new alien that busts out of Loeb, shows up in the shower where two of our characters are having a very steamy shower scene together and attacks him in the shower. That one was awesome. And then they have the final showdown in the hangar. Classic aliens. I mean, George Lucas would say it's poetry. It all comes back around. In a very alien fashion, they have the final showdown in space in the hangar of their vessel. And they're able to trick the alien, get it trapped in one of their vehicles, and launch it into space. I gotta say, all of these scenes work for me. The horror is there. The action is there. I really enjoyed Alien Covenant, and I highly recommend it to you. And to be honest, if I would rank the Alien movies, it would go Alien, Aliens, and then Alien Covenant. That's where I would put it. So I hope you enjoyed this review. I hope you've been enjoying these bonus episodes while I'm waiting for Darren to come back from vacation. He's back. We're watching movies. We're recording new episodes. We're getting ready for season two. So stick with us. I don't have a movie planned out for next week. We might have to take a pause and just wait until season two is ready. Or maybe I'll get to see a movie this weekend. And if I do, I'll sit down and I'll talk about it with you guys. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show on whatever podcasting app you're listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meh Movies. You can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris. Thanks for supporting the show, everyone. And the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad. Because on this show, there are no meh movies.